League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Ryan, I'm never sure how much I can trust infographics on Twitter or X, but one of them that I saw the other day is that car insurance is going astronomically high. And you know what? This is the time that the Burns Insurance Agency could help you out because they're going to work for you.
It's the beauty of an independent insurance agency, Mr. Luke Buer. And that's where just this past week, my father at the Burns Insurance Agency helped a young couple switched their home and auto over to him, and guess what? They've saved themselves over $500 in doing so. You know all the effort they had to do? All they had to do was either check him out online at insurancebyburns.com or just shoot him an email, bill@insurancebyburns.com, because I'll remind people, not only is he licensed in the great state of Minnesota, both of the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you think you're paying too much for your home, auto, commercial, your boat, whatever it may be, and you're thinking, I want to see if a Gopher fan can help me out, go to insurancebyburns.com.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to Minnesota has not allowed a point in the month of September. And we're 15 days in edition as the Gophers absolutely, and I get to use this word in the correct context, eviscerate the Nevada Wolfpack in a 27-0 victory. The offense continues to be very passing game driven. The defense continues to be very physical, very aggressive. And sweet giblets and junipers, Luke Buer, special teams actually did something for the first time in many years. And joining us to break it down for this final non-conference game is the man who sits next to me in the press box, one of the most knowledgeable people I'll ever come across in my entire life in the game of football. And someone that I am sure is tired of hearing my voice and my stupid comments, Gopher guru himself, Daniel House. Mr. House, how are things for you this morning? And are you tired of sitting next to me three games in?
Burnsy, I'm soaking it all in. It's an experience. Yesterday he was jacked about special teams. So I get to hear like his ebbs and flows throughout the game and when he sees certain things that he was prepping for during the week. And it's fun to hear your perspective.
Can I just ask one question real quick? When Corey Parrish went back for the first punt, like, did he keep his shirt on?
He did keep his shirt on. He did follow press box to court.
Okay.
They did give a message, and now they're going to have to, when they do the pre-announcement before the game, they're going to have to tell Ryan, please keep your shirt on during special teams punt returns.
Luke, I got two things for you on that. My watch then, when Coy Parrish went on the field, said, oh, it looks like you've started a workout because my heart rate jumped. But the other funny part is, House and I would know this, and this is only, we'll give you a little behind the scenes thing here in the press box. Minnesota had a new press box announcer this year.
Okay.
Or at least they did through the first couple of weeks. And I'll be honest, he was struggling with identifying players and some different things. House, are we led to believe, because that guy was not back yesterday, they just completely went away from, for the first time I can remember, a press box announcer type of guy yesterday. What, did you think his performance was that bad that they just had to just say, thanks, buddy, we're done?
I don't know if the PFF graded him out like poorly or I don't know.
It was rough. I mean, I ain't going to tell you otherwise, especially Some of the enunciations on Minnesota player names are just identifying. There's multiple number guys on this roster, and he was struggling. But that was one of the things we noticed early in the day was, okay, so that guy's not back. And they just completely went away from it. So, yeah, Coy Parrish goes back. We got a lot of things to talk about in a four-score victory, Mr. Buehr.
Yeah, we absolutely do. So the Gophers win this game 27-0. Ryan, eviscerates probably the right word. It was a game they dominated basically from beginning to end. I mean, if you wanted a nitpick, you could argue, hey, you'd really like to see a couple more touchdowns out of the Gophers. But the reality is, folks, we just have to start talking about this defense. This group led by Corey Heatherman has now in two games a row not given up a single point. They have forced numerous turnovers. A position group that we thought was really going to potentially struggle, which was safety, seems to maybe be a position of strength now. I don't know, guys. We just got to start with this defense. And in house, I guess maybe my very first question will be for you, and you can kick things off. It really seems like that they're playing a little bit more zone, and they're able to get to and get on receivers more quickly than we've seen in the past. Maybe what's led to that?
I really like how they've been featuring Jack Henderson in the scheme, his versatility and being able to use him attacking off the edge. If you watched Heatherman at JMU, you saw that, you know, nickel skill set's going to be really important for this defense. I just think that they're mixing things up a lot, Luke, where you see that interception from Kerry Brown, the second one. They're in the dime package and, you know, they're running that post and he's able to sort of like Buzz and Rob on that route. And being able to, you know, keep defenses guessing with multiple presentations, you get into passing downs, you get overload fronts, you get lining guys up in different spots, you got multiple defensive backs rotating in and out based on some of their skill sets. So, like, showing a certain presentation and making one little tweak that leads to an interception for Kerry Brown. I mean, it's just little things like that that the defense has to account for. You're maybe not, you know, you're not being very cut and dry about what you're doing defensively. Like, you're able to really disguise things. And I think that's been the takeaway that I've had: versatility, multiple, and disguise to be really aggressive defensively.
You can't really get a beat on what he's going to call, which I think that's part of what makes him so good as a play caller defensively, is first down versus third down. I don't know that there's really a tendency with his blitz percentage, house, you'd be able to tell us as we continue to get more data, but yeah, he's very unpredictable in when he's going to bring pressure and where he's going to bring pressure.
But I really like, from a stylistic standpoint, it's like sometimes it's blitz, sometimes it's simulated pressure where you're, you know, dropping a player in exchange for a second or third level defender. Sometimes it's like a sim blitz where they're showing a simulated pressure and then blitz somebody behind it. Like, there are a lot of different things that they're doing pressure-wise where, like, you can still give the illusion of pressure while maintaining coverage in the back end and creating challenges for the quarterback. I thought they had Lewis really confused yesterday by changing presentations and putting in multiple different types of coverages and groupings. And I thought they handled that offense quite well, just being very disciplined. And, you know, you look at week one where they were at just tackling, block, deconstruction, physicality at the point of attack. I think it's improved every game to the point where it was pretty solid yesterday. And now that's where you want to be heading into the Big Ten slate. Now you're going to get tested. The whole ball game raises up. And I think this is going to be the big measuring stick to see where they're at.
I tell you, if Brendan Lewis never has to play against Minnesota again in his entire life, it'll be too soon. You go back to 2021 when he was Colorado's starting quarterback as a redshirt freshman. They lose 30-0. He's 8 of 16, gets sacked, I think, 4 times. And then yesterday, Brendan Lewis had been playing well coming into this game, had 6 touchdowns, no turnovers, had run for, I believe, 69 yards per game, 10 attempts for -1 yards. They didn't let him in the rushing game get going at any point. 3 picks. It's, if Brendan Lewis sees the maroon and gold, he's going to have PTSD going forward. But I thought Ja Joyner and this defensive line had a great game. Now, you look at the stat line for Ja, 4 total tackles, that's it. And you're thinking to yourself, Ryan, what are you possibly talking about? Well, he had 5 pressures, 4 hurries. hit the quarterback four times, drew two holding calls. You look at the first interception for Kerry Brown. It's Ja Joyner who beats the offensive lineman inside, hits Lewis. It's a wounded duck. And when wounded ducks, whether they're coming from a quarterback's arm or number four pellets, they need to be caught. And that's where Kerry Brown makes the diving interception. You look at on the second one, yeah, Kerry Brown to House's point. He's kind of playing robber there in the center of the field. There gets pressure on the quarterback. I mean, but you are seeing this defensive line, and I think just even Ja Joyner had one of his best games that you'll see. I thought he was great against the run, had a lot of pressures. But this defensive line, or even Jalen Logan Reddinghouse, was someone that we've continued to talk about in the press box in terms of one of the strangest plays that you'll see, Luke, for a first down, where I had to ask House this, and I'm going to trust Daniel with it. When Jalen Logan Redding knocked the ball out of Lewis's hand, who then picked it up and threw for a first down, I turned to House and I said, is that technically a strip sack? And it is also technically a first down. And he believes it is, but you're getting efforts from multiple different guys on this defensive line. And on the day, Nevada only runs for 58 yards on 31 attempts. And they're going to have a much tougher test next week against that Iowa front, which we can get to, who has run for 200 or more yards in every game this season. But it doesn't take a genius like the three of us to tell you this. If you can put Nevada into third and long, or any college football offense into third and long, you're going to be in a lot of advantageous situations as a defense. Nevada came into the game 19th in the country on third down. They were converting 55% of their third downs. Minnesota, I believe in the first half, they allowed 7 third downs as a defense. None of them were in third and short. That's exactly where you want to be, and that's where this defense wants to be. So if they can continue to stop the run, or just stop whatever is going on offensively on the flip side on early downs, and you can get Corey Heatherman into passing down situations with the way that he is using these defensive players at all three levels, I think you're finding out why Minnesota hasn't allowed a point in the first 15 days of the year.
Yeah, just looking at some of the stats on the day, the counting stats in particular, Minnesota gives up 0 points, which is obviously the headline. But if you look for Nevada, they were 15 of 22 passing the ball for 114 yards. They only rushed the ball for 58 yards on 31 attempts, which is 1.9 yards per carry. Again, the thing that we stressed so much last year, and which was such a thorn in their side, they were again better against Nevada on third downs. Nevada was only 6 of 15, which is below that 50% mark where you want to be. So definitely an improvement. And then one of the more advanced analytics that really stood out to me, the offense's EPA on the day was -17.6. Just a real testament to the defense able to really, really create some disruption for them, obviously force turnovers, etc. I guess going forward, maybe just looking ahead, Daniel, because we won't get to preview with you, what are you hoping to see and expect from this defense going into Big Ten play?
I'd say just building off a lot of things that they've done in the non-conference slate. They've introduced some things that they obviously want to do defensively based on their personnel. I think they want to be more multiple. You can get all your DBs involved and on the field, like Burns kind of alluded to there. It's, mixing and matching your personnel based on who you're playing, because stylistically you're going to see a path here where it's, ground and pound versus speed and space. You're going to have Iowa, Michigan, USC, all a little bit different in what they do stylistically. So to be malleable with your personnel to account for that, I think that's some of the things that they were doing in the non-conference slate to get some of these players reps so that they were ready for that. You mentioned the defensive line. I thought they were really physical. That was the big takeaway. Ja had a really good game. JLR being able to push and be very physical. Collapse some pockets. They're able to maintain edges. I thought, overall, you look at that game, I just felt like Nevada looked gassed from the minute they walked out on the field. And I think some of that has to do with
they ran down 87 plays a week ago offensively, potentially.
Yes. And the previous week was a thriller right to the end. It was hot in Alabama. Like, I just felt from the jump that they didn't have a lot of physicality at the point of attack. Minnesota looked much more physical, much faster. Like it, and they had to travel. They had to come up here. Like, I just didn't think that Nevada played their best game and Minnesota was ready and prepared to go. So I think going into the Big Ten slate now, it's like, what wrinkles are you going to implement that build off of what you've done positively through the first few games and the growth that you've shown? I mean, you want to see some growth from the first game to the third game. And now, like we always say, the measuring stick's the fourth game. Once you get to this fourth game, you have a lot of information that you can kind of figure out what each team's going to bring to the table. And I think Heatherman's off to a good start here in terms of like featuring personnel and doing some things that make sense for maximizing strengths and minimizing weaknesses for players.
I tell you, Luke, I was a little surprised yesterday to see the linebackers rotate as much as they did.
Mm-hmm.
To where I think Cody Lindenberg had one of his lower snap share games. Now, I'd also tell you, if you haven't noticed, he has a gigantic brace on his right elbow area. So I'm going to assume that has something to do with it. You know, you look at his Pro Football Focus stuff yesterday, graded out as one of the best guys in run defense and tackling. Not incredibly sure what that was about. Heck, we even saw Chan Hassan's Eli Mao mix into the game in certain packages, which was an interesting wrinkle.
But I think some of that, too, is like keep your personnel fresh, get sure. some guys in the game. You know, like your defense is always going to play better when your personnel is, you know, not gas. So I think that's some of it too, is just trying to get as many players in the game, as many packages as possible, and adjust it week to week based on what the opponent does well.
I'd also say secondary wise, we've talked about Kerry Brown, who has the game of his career so far, being in the right spot at the right time. And there's a lot to be said for that, especially as we came into the season, Luke, talking about who is going to make plays in this secondary. And I think we've seen a multitude of different guys. I also think we owe Danny Collins a little bit of a flower.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that.
Great coach.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about how I was very, very worried about safety. And I still am to an extent heading into Big Ten play. You're not going to be facing Nevada and Rhode Island. But with the development that they're getting from Kerry Brown, I think Coleman Bryson is someone we're not talking about enough. And he has been, I think, one of their surest players in the run game in terms of stopping the run, making the tackle in the right spot. I think Aiden Goosby is getting better. You're seeing Coy Parrish mixed in. You're seeing Jayonte McMillan continue. There's a lot of moving parts at the safety position. Plus, you got Darius Green back yesterday, which was good to see. You got that sack. I mean, there's a lot of mixing and matching going on, House. And I mm-hmm. think Danny Collins, we've talked about 6-7 names there, plus Coy Parrish, who mixed in a little bit yesterday. What's your evaluation of how and why the safeties continue to get a little bit better here so far in each non-conference game?
It all comes down to reps. You know, you get in the game, you can only do so much in practice. So getting everybody on the field in games is great. And like the sub-package nature of it, that player can really hone in on specific techniques that they need to play within that role. And I think that helps, you know, getting them on the field, introducing them to the route combinations they're going to see. You know, you'll see little learning moments throughout games where you're like, yeah, okay, that's just a player that hasn't played very much, you know, but then that detail gets corrected and fixed. And I think Danny's done a good job. You mentioned Coleman Bryson. He's played really well. He's been very physical, able to make plays around the box, rotate in, help in the run game. I believe there's some stuff that they can unlock with Bryson coming into this Big Ten slate where you can get him around the line of scrimmage and the pressure game, do some things with him. I'm excited to kind of see how his role potentially evolves, because I feel like they haven't really shown. There's some things that they haven't shown yet that I feel like they've been kind of potentially setting up over the course of the first few games here that maybe we'll see as the Big Ten slate goes on.
I also want to give House an opportunity to talk about his favorite player in existence on planet Earth right now, which is number 20, Jack Henderson, I know he's been very excited to talk about. What do you think about the way that Heatherman is using number 20 as almost a Swiss Army knife on this back end?
It's really, really impressive. I mean, you watch at JMU how he used his nickel, especially like on first down pressure stuff.
You know, being able to have him on the field with his physicality to be able to set the edge versus the run, be physical, get off of blocks, disruptive as a blitzer in the blitz game. I think that's something they really wanted to unlock this season. You know, you just look at his presence in the defense. I think it's added so much to what they want to do and being multiple. He's that guy that they're kind of building around because of his versatility. And now, I mean, what else are they going to put in where they can put him in different spots as well? Like, that's the big takeaway that I had in, you know, talking to people through the spring into training camp, that just like there is the ability to be multiple based on the defensive backs that they had. And I think that's been apparent based on what they've done through the first few games. And now what's that evolution look like going into the Big Ten? Because obviously if you're coaches, you're not showing very much right now in these non-conference games. The real stuff will start when the conference games are played.
Well, Luke, the last thing I want to end on are the corners. Luke, should I start with the good news or the bad news?
let's go with the bad news and then try and, you know, finish off on the good news.
Well, the bad news is Justin Wally left the game yesterday and did not return. And mm-hmm. I went back and I watched that rep this morning. He's just in a backpedal, and then he comes up limp mm-hmm. and immediately goes to the injury tent. Now, if you're looking for hopefully and potential good news within that, he then came out of the injury tent, and I watched him on the sidelines. They put a brace on his right knee. And they actually had him warm up and try to get warm to go back in the game. Now, ultimately, they made the decision to, out of halftime, put ice on that right knee. But to me, if it would have been, again, we're all speculating, which we have to speculate because PJ Fleck refuses to talk about injuries in any meaningful capacity because of the way he is, but that tells me that the doctors, and I agree with Justin Gard in this regard, that it is likely not a season ender because you don't put a brace on it.
Yeah.
They check for everything stability-wise and whatnot. Now, his availability for Iowa is certainly in question. I know that they were going to run some more tests here on Sunday. If and when I hear something, I'll post about it on Gopher Illustrated about his status and what it could potentially be, but it's not great news that one of your best corners, who was playing really, really well to start this season, has a non-contact knee injury. Now his status is in doubt. But I also want to give some flowers to Ethan Robinson.
Yeah.
And the Bucknell transfer has been everything that I was hoping for and more. Now, I'd also give an assist there to Dinkytown Athletes with being able to have a comparable NIL package for him. They were not the highest one in the room. I can assure you of that. But they were able to help out there. And I think for me, House, Ethan Robinson is, you know, we talk about Max Brosmer having a high-end processor. I think what Robinson has is very similar to that as a cornerback. He's got a lot of experience. He knows where to look and when to look. You saw that on that interception yesterday where I think he just got his eyes back on the ball, saw the ball in the air, and just went up and made a play on it. But he's also been very physical in the run game. So with Wally's status in question, Ethan Robinson now is certainly going to be someone that is going to be in the limelight much more. But what's been your evaluation of the first three-game sample of Ethan Robinson's Gopher career?
Solid, playing within the system, playing under control, like definitely feels confident, comfortable with what he's doing. You know, that experience that you get at the FCS level, I think that's invaluable. You know, people talk about, well, you know, you're playing in the FCS, but you see a lot of stuff. You see a lot of different styles of offense. You played a lot of snaps. You look at FCS corners that translate up to the Power Five. You know, if you get the right guy, the transition goes really well. And I think, you know, you saw it, Bucknell, the ability to click and close and drive on the football as a zone corner. And then I think he's, you know, what I really wanted to see is what's he going to be like in man-to-man cover situations. But he's been physical and he's been able to transition, show good transition quickness and be physical and locate the football. And then you mentioned the run game. I think he's been good in that respect too, like physical, willing to stick his nose in there and make plays. Like this was a player that I felt like with his experience level was key because they needed somebody that had that opposite of Wally. And to have him play through the first three games looking comfortable and confident, that is a good sign for them heading into the Big Ten slate, especially with Wally, you know, now with the injury, they're going to need Robinson to maybe be the premier guy here for a little bit.
All right. Yeah, I think the last comment I'll add is this Gopher defense in the last two games has tackled much better. I think we have to take that with a grain of salt and, you know, the level of competition. In first games also can just be weird. The Gophers missed a massive number of tackles. I think
22 missed tackles in that first game. You're also going against Omarion Hampton. But that 22 number, the highest of any game in the Fleck era, and to your point, Luke, Pro Football Focus had him at 4 missed tackles against Rhode Island and then only 4 missed tackles yesterday against Nevada. Turns out, Luke, it's a lot easier to stop the run when you can actually tackle well near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, so that would be a thing to keep an eye on, especially going forward into these next few games. Obviously, the running back for Iowa, Johnson, is really, really good. So we'll see how they can stop the run there. I think we'll catch a quick break here, and then we'll get in and review the offense next. Ryan, Homefield Apparel is back in 2024 supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio. This is some of the best premium vintage looking stuff you can find. You can get Gopher apparel. You can get all sorts of other universities that are licensed apparel. It's awesome. You know that I wear my Washington shirt a lot. I also wear a ton of my Gopher gear all the time. But Ryan, honestly, they've really got something for everyone. They now have a vintage corduroy hat. The Minnesota one looks elite. So if you have one of those hipsters in your life that really need some Minnesota apparel, they've got you covered.
Look, I have a gigantic head and I don't think this thing would fit my head, but it looks fresh. Like it is a Minnesota maroon with gold lettering vintage corduroy hat. I'm telling you, this thing looks fresh. If you haven't already, go to homefieldapparel.com to check it out. Whether it's that, whether it's just the apparel coming up for the maroon out, they got the coaches' jackets, whatever it may be, I can guarantee you can go to homefieldapparel.com. And you can find something that you're going to want to buy. You're going to wear it to the tailgate lot, and people are going to make comments to you in a very positive way. So homefieldapparel.com, when you get the checkout, use promo code GG24 to get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG and the numbers 24.
Again, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group has been supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio for a couple seasons now, but maybe more importantly, they're supporting Dinkytown athletes. And if you're buying or selling a house, these are the guys that you want to work with if you want to support the maroon and gold. Ethan Robinson, as Ryan alluded to, is a transfer that the Gophers are able to get in large part because they're able to make a competitive offer, you know, in terms of an NIL package. And Ryan, honestly, Team Dinkytown Real Estate is maybe the best way that you can support them, because you can use an asset you have already to go towards Team Dinkytown, or to go towards Dinkytown athletes.
Correct. And that's where It's a very large sum of money. I mean, $4,000 is not something I have laying around that I could potentially donate anywhere. But if you're buying or selling a house and you want somebody that you can trust, but you also want to have a meaningful impact on Gopher Athletics, check out the folks at TeamDinkytown.com. They got plenty of stuff for you to click around there. Or you can just give them a call. They'd love to talk to you at 612-250-8562.
All right, let's get into when the Gophers were on offense. They amassed 27 points on the day. The offense put up 386 yards of total offense, which is 191 through the air, 195 on the ground. You might look at that and say, wow, really balanced, ran the ball well, threw the ball pretty well, maybe not great, but pretty well. But guys, I'd argue that the stats are somewhat misleading in this one. You know, they didn't actually run the ball particularly well outside of the one home run that Darius Taylor had. So that, you know, I think we start there. The offensive line, Ryan, is, as we've talked about, has been a concern, where coming into the season, it felt like it was going to be a position of strength. But then again, we also have to have the disclaimer that Brian Callahan offensive lines have often started slow, and they found a way to bounce back. But this is very much the microscope is on them going into the game against Iowa in the early slate in the Big Ten.
I wrote about it after the game, and that's where my number one priority, if I'm PJ Fleck this week, is figuring out the offensive line. Same thing like last week, but now you have no more time to figure it out. And that's the unfortunate part, is now you have Iowa's incredibly long and physical defensive line coming in. then you get to go to Ann Arbor, and then the first road game, you get to go against one of the best defensive lines in college football that the Wolverines have to offer. And then, great, you get to come home and face the creatures from USC that they bought out of the portal. So you have no more time to work on it. And we've seen them continue to do some personnel changes where Slinger, Wisconsin, redshirt sophomore Ashton Beers got his first career start at right guard. I think it was a learning experience, I'll say, for him in the first half with some missed assignments and some missed blocks. I thought he got better as the game went on. But I'm getting tired of talking about the missed assignments and the execution details, or even your star left tackle in Ariante Irisarry commits his third penalty in two games. I don't quite understand why it's as bad as it is in the run game. Now, Fleck tried to talk about afterwards that all these teams are selling out to stop the run, and they're plus one, plus two in the box, and they're sending run blitzes. And House could probably tell you that there's some validity in that, but I'll say this. Mm-hmm. The left side of the offensive line to me, and I'm no Derek Burns, but the left side of the offensive line, I'd say from left tackle to center, you've got really good foot speed, and you got more athleticism there. And that's where the right side of the line, I think it struggles a little bit more. Now, Quinn Carroll, I thought, played really well. It's just when you have five guys trying to work as one, and one guy, and it's not always right guard. It could be the center. It could be someone else. House, they just cannot consistently get five guys on the same page. Where you look at that Darius Taylor 80-yard touchdown, the left side of the line plus Nick Kallerup just eviscerate and move mass. That's what it's looked like in years past. But House, what do you make of now? We're through 25% of the season, and the MAs and the execution details from a very veteran offensive line continue to rear their head in the run game.
Yeah, I think, you know, Fleck talked about, you know, boxes, you know, they're rolling safeties down. There's some numbers things, you know, you get a certain look where you got a free guy rolling down, rolling in there and making a play. And I think sometimes it's just like them being able to go to the passing game to eventually just chip away and eventually hit an explosive play. I think that's been the thing that I've taken away from the non-conference games is, like, you know, not just sticking with the run, passing to get to the point where then, you know, you can tie your pass and run game together, maybe displace somebody, get somebody in the wrong spot, get a good box count, spread the defense out a little bit horizontally to be able to run the ball effectively. So I think that's what you saw is being, you know, being willing to get the passing game going, get those concepts rolling. And then eventually as the game goes on, you're able to hit on an explosive. You're starting to break some tackles. I thought they were getting some vertical movement in the run game. You know, Ashton Beers is starting to, you know, get some reps in action in games and becoming more familiar with what, you know, the Big Ten offensive line requirements are. You know, just now I guess it's going to be more adjusting to the Big Ten defensive lines. Like you say, you got Iowa's defensive line coming in here. That's going to be one of the most fundamentally sound fronts you're going to play against all year. Extremely disciplined, being able to generate a lot of knockback. You know, that's going to be a big challenge. But I think Minnesota has shown the willingness to pivot and, you know, tie their pass and run games together. And I think that's going to be the thing moving forward is, are they able to eventually get to the point where, you know, they're able to get some pressure off the run game because the pass game is able to hit on some stuff.
Well, Luke, that's where we've talked for years on this podcast about essentially for the entire length of this pod. We've done hundreds of episodes. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I think I can confidently say that heading into Big Ten play, the identity of this offense for the first time is there a throw it to run it offense instead mm-hmm. of a run it to throw it. Some of that's because you don't have Mo Ibrahim. Some of that's because the offensive line is struggling to figure it out. And that includes the tight ends in the run game as well. But I think it's also because Brosmer has been,
yeah,
what we've seen from Max Brosmer, I'd say the last nine quarters is what I thought we were going to see for most of the season. Now, he's going to be under a lot more pressure the next few weeks, and I understand that. But it's weird to say, Luke Buehr, Gopher football is now a throw-it-to-run-it offense, and I guess kudos to Greg Harbaugh for pivoting, because we even saw, I think it was on the second red zone possession, Luke, they had it first and goal, and they threw it three times because Harbaugh knows they can't run the football right now, and their best chance is to try and get it through the air. It's a strange world we live in, Luke, that now that they're just a passing – I mean, this thing revolves around Brosmer.
Yeah. One thing I want to highlight on the offensive line and probably why they're going to Brosmer is if you look at some of the advanced analytics, the O-line yards in this game, they had 39 compared to the highlight yards. They're accredited for 108. This just tells you like the balance in terms of the offensive line generating yards versus the running back. It comes down largely to that one play from Darius Taylor, but consistently so far this season, the O-line yards have been really, really low. And the highlight yards have been low as well. So you haven't been able to, have a sustained running game. And as a result, Ryan, I do appreciate that they're trying to kind of take what the defense gives them, especially against those loaded boxes. And Daniel, you wrote a great piece this week on Gopher Guru about the extension of the running game in the short zone passing game. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how they're implementing this and why Brosmer is finding so much success?
I see a lot of like Kyle Shanahan type of influence in this offense, you know, the ability to have a really detailed, quick game, be able to take advantage of what the defense is giving you, find the zone windows, and then, you know, widen out vertically and force, you know, find the zone windows when they're available, getting the backs involved in the passing game. Last week, I just did a whole breakdown on quick game stuff and some of the elements that they are using from Kyle Shanahan's playbook in some areas. And I think that that speaks to like a little bit of an evolution in terms of like pre-snap motion. I noticed not just pre-snap motion, but motion at the snap, which I think is something that, you know, you look at the advantages of just motion versus motion at the snap. There's an advantage of motioning at the snap where the offensive player is going right into the route at the snap after motioning. There's a big advantage to that. You look at the NFL, you watch the 49ers, the Rams, the Ravens, they're all doing that. And Minnesota has done that more this season as well. On top of just, you know, that motion will give you coverage identification. It creates space. It sets up leverage. It gets guys matchups to move them around. I think that's been kind of an X factor early on here is the motion usage, the quick game, the ability to really get Brosmer into high efficiency situations where he can use the processing that he has. He'll find the back, he'll go through the whole progression. And you'll see a couple of instances in the last game where that happened. And this one as well, that like he will get to that end of that progression and take the yardage, which that allows your offense to stay on schedule. You think about maybe years past, you're throwing the ball away, you get a negative play. Like that just kills you offensively, where now if you're able to get 5 yards on first down, you're putting yourself in a spot where your playbook is wide open. So I think those things have been kind of the takeaway that I've noticed is implementing some different stuff offensively.
So you'll read Daniel House, but you won't read a single thing I do. And we do a podcast
I read I read the five takeaways.
When do you read me now? You always love to talk about how you never read a single thing I do.
It's kind of a bit, but I mean, it is true that I go through ebbs and flows in terms of reading you. The reality is I saw the tweet from Daniel and I was like, I want to read that. So I read it. It was great.
Well, thank you.
I think the house's point though, this isn't the same old Gopher offense. I'm tired of seeing some of the casual fans tweet that or email me, carry
or just like whatever. Or they're just like frustrated with the play calling. Like that's the other thing that I get a little bit irked at.
This isn't the same old Gophers. The amount of pre-snap motion and shifts in motions just in general is exponentially higher than it has been in any other PJ Fleck-led offense. And that is because, to House's point, Brosmer knows what he's looking for when they're using this pre-snap motion. They're, as you see in the NFL constantly, which is filled with quarterbacks who are the best in the world, and they're the best at identifying what that motion is trying to tell them, whether it's zone or man, whether what type of coverage is going to be. Brosmer is not quite at that level, but he is one of the most high-end processing quarterbacks they've had mentally wear a Gopher uniform in quite some time, which is why you're seeing them use it as much as they are, because they're trying to give him as much pre-snap information to dictate where the ball is going to go, because to House's point, any college football offense that is in second and third and long is going to have a rough day consistently. But if Brosmer can figure out what the coverage is and then either check it down or put the ball where it needs to be, sustaining drives leads to points, which leads to explosive plays as well. It's just nice to see now that you have had a personnel change at quarterback with Brosmer in eighth and out, Brosmer maybe being a little bit more capable mentally as a quarterback, that they have now designed the offense to his strengths, which to House's point revolves a lot around a lot more pre-snap motion and just motion in general to try and give him as much data as possible.
All right. The other thing I want to make sure that we touch on, you know, the offense was good, but the other reality is, you know, they only scored 6 points in the first quarter. Those are both situations that you really like to see them convert those into touchdowns. That was frustrating. And the other thing that you just got to acknowledge is the fact that they weren't very good on third downs. Again, they were 4 of 11. In some of that, Daniel, is probably to game script, right? Like they're getting behind the chains, and they ended up in third and longs, etc. And arguably, no one's good in third and longs, right? So this again speaks to their ability to either get the quick game to get them into manageable third downs or second downs, or frankly, you know, just getting the running game going a little bit more.
The perfect example is on that 2-minute drive. You know, they're able to hit that check down, and that like jolted the whole drive. You know, you feel the flow. Like if you pay close enough attention to the first play of every drive, so possession and 10, and you see how offenses react when they get positive yardage right away, you'd be surprised at the impact that has on the outcome of the drive. And I think that's something that you saw there in that 2-minute drive, that was a really impressive sequence. Like I would argue that was one of the most impressive 2-minute drives the Gophers have had in a long time. Just the ability to execute it at a high level and spread it around and make plays. I mean, I thought that was the highlight of the game.
I'll say this, and it's going to come across as negative, and I don't mean it that way, but my expectations for Daniel Jackson are just that much higher than anyone else coming off an all Big Ten season. I was really frustrated with his day yesterday, where I texted House about this, where Minnesota has the screen to him and it goes for 39 yards. That should have been a touchdown 100 out of 100 times. If you go back and watch that play, he has three offensive linemen running about 2-3 yards behind him to his right. There's one man in front of him. If he just slows down and veers a little bit to the right, he walks into the end zone because Greg Johnson is running like he's going to a Chanhassen all-you-can-eat buffet. And all he has to do is slow down.
Do you think
he walks into the end zone and the game is 10-0?
I actually wondered watching that Ryan live if he even knew he was there. Like, but yes, I agree with you. That needs to be a touchdown.
You have awareness as a senior receiver to 100%. Know, like, it's a screen. Of course I'm going to have offensive linemen coming down the field. Just look to my right and see three big hog mollies scorching down the field. Like, you got to reward those boys with letting them hit a safety in space. Instead, it's first and goal, and Minnesota's red zone offense doesn't do anything, and it's 6-0 instead of 10-0. Or he had a very Tyler Johnson-esque 2019 slant drop on a 3rd and 7, which killed me. It hit him in the chest, and he dropped it. I mean, it could have been a much bigger day, and that's where 4 receptions for 61 yards, you're thinking to yourself, well, Harbaugh's got to get Daniel Jackson going. Daniel Jackson's got to catch the third down slant that hits him in the chest. He's got to be able to have the cognizant ability to know where his offensive linemen are. Yeah, Brosmer missed him deep, but then he was wide open on a long throw that could have been a big play. They also targeted him in the end zone, which drew PI. There was another play in that late second quarter where they targeted him on a go ball. I thought that could have been a penalty, wasn't called. It's just I have higher expectations for him. And I understand that he still has yet to have a touchdown this season. I'm just telling you, it should have been 10-0 on that screen. You want to see him catch the ones that hit him in the chest too. I'd also tell you, I had from watching the game back this morning, that Christian Driver interception is going to bug me for a while. I think that played a big part in why Christian Driver only played 10 snaps offensively. House, you can tell me if I'm wrong on your rewatch, but the way I interpreted that play, Christian Driver is not the first read And I think he was, depending upon the coverage, was supposed to go to Jamison Gears, but that wasn't the coverage that Brosmer saw. He saw the one-on-one opportunity. They throw the slot fade to Driver. He just doesn't run the route. I mean, he doesn't even look for the ball. And by the time he does, the Nevada defensive back saw it 2 seconds earlier, and he makes a play on it. He gets to the sideline, and from the TV copy, you see Brosmer talk to him. You see Fleck come over while he's talking to receivers coach Matt Simon. Fleck had some very strong words of encouragement for Christian Driver. It's not the type of effort that is going to lead to more passes thrown your way, but on the interception, what did you see?
Yeah, it just looked like you said, there was some sort of miscommunication there where Driver maybe didn't think that that was going to be where the ball was going to go.
But you still have to run your route.
Well, yeah, and that's what I think Fleck was alluding to after the game, is like you gotta finish that route with authority. You know, you got to run that route like you're going to get the ball, even if you think you're not going to. You know, which I think that maybe was the case. That's something that I would say moving into the Big Ten, your execution has to be on point. When you have big plays available, you got to make them. Like there's a couple in that, you know, a couple in the last two games. You think about that up the seam shot to Driver. You think about that pick there. Like those type of plays, when you have the right matchups, you got to take advantage of those. And I think, Luke, you mentioned it about, you know, starting fast. Mm-hmm. That's going to be really important. It was like 3-0 in the Rhode Island game at the end of the first quarter. It was 6-0 at the end of the Nevada game in the first quarter with some opportunities there. I think that that's going to be really important going into the Big Ten, starting fast.
Yeah, I was going to actually add, like, they started slow. It was 6-0 after the first quarter in this game, but it all turned on that middle eight, right? You often talk about how important the middle 8 minutes of the game are, right? It's the last 4 minutes of the second half, or of the first half, and the first 4 minutes of the second half. And if you look for the Gophers, technically their first touchdown doesn't fall in the middle eight. It scored at 4:03, but I'm going to count it for the middle eight. But they end up getting 14 points in the last 4 minutes and 3 seconds. And then they end up getting their third touchdown with I think it was 8:48 left to go. Like that was a 21-point swing basically in that middle eight section, 8:58. It's just incredible how those 8 minutes can often tell and dictate the game. And this is where it really, you know, took the game wide open for the Gophers, and it was very clearly their game. Even though they were dominating in the first quarter, they just didn't show it on the scoreboard. It'll be interesting to see if they can improve, Daniel, and actually finish some of these drives early, because it can make them all the more dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, if you can come away with touchdowns early in the game, get yourself off to a fast start, then that changes the game script for the other team. So I think it's just little execution things here and there that you're going to have to raise that bar even higher now that the competition level is going to go up. You're going to have to make every play. You're going to have to catch the balls. You can't drop passes. Like now the mistakes have to be minimized as much as possible.
Well, that's where even going into next week, you have Elijah's zone beater Spencer now, who has been much more consistent. I don't think that's a...
There's no question.
It was huge in the first 20 minutes of that game. You saw Brosmer deliver a fantastic ball on like an over route for a 27-yard game. You see Spencer finding the ability to sit down in zone and Brosmer finding him. Darius Taylor surpasses. He's got 9 catches now in his first 2 games with Max Brosmer, including his first receiving touchdown. But I mean, we talked about a house, and I don't want to steal your thunder too much, but I mean, I think Brosmer's very good against zone coverage, but now you're going to be facing an Iowa team that is much more man-heavy and much more physical at the line of scrimmage. So that's where the Daniel Jacksons and Elijah Spencers and Lameke Brockingtons of the world, it's going to get a little bit more difficult for them now that you get to face some of the, like we continue to say, these defenses for USC, Michigan, and Iowa. So I'm going to be very curious what you think about how Minnesota should evolve here passing game-wise heading into this next stretch.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at stylistically Iowa, you're going to get a lot of, based on what they've done, you know, cover 3 zone, quarter half stuff. You'll get some 2-man under stuff where they got 2 high and man underneath and passing down situations. So I think what's really going to be the key, and it always is when you play that team, you got to be very efficient on first and second down. You're going to have to be able to stay ahead of the sticks, because that defense, once you get behind it, that's when you're going to get, you know, the aggressive coverage. You're going to get some blitzes occasionally. Phil Parker will dash those in. Like, this defense is going to play fundamentally sound. They're going to be in the right spot. They have given up a few explosives here and there. They've just been magnified, I think, by when they've happened. Like, they've just happened at the worst possible times, where I think that's kind of created the narrative that I was giving up more explosives. I think that, yeah, it's maybe a little bit more than usual, but they've come at inopportune times. I think, you know, what you're going to see is, you know, what type of approach does Iowa take? You know, are their coverage schemes a little bit more aggressive in this game to really test Minnesota's receivers and their physicality and ability to work through routes and not giving Brosmer as many opportunities to find those zones? I think that's going to be interesting, because Phil Parker is always going to have something dialed up that's creative and unique.
I feel like we should end with some Darius Taylor talk. And an 80-yard touchdown wasn't on the bingo card for me with Darius Taylor. Darius Taylor is a lot of things, but when Nick Kallerup is running stride for stride with you, I would be venture to say, and I think it's accurate, Darius Taylor isn't the fastest running back you'll see, but you see when things click in the run game and you're running back and make the first guy miss, and then he can get into space, and credit to Nick Kallerup and Lamecki Brockington. Heck, even as he crosses into the end zone, as he veers back left, Max Brosmer ran 80 yards down the field to try and lend a hand there. Darius Taylor, when he is healthy, and I have had multiple people or fans reach out to me and say, Darius Taylor is clearly not healthy. I would say, I think Darius Taylor is a lot healthier than you think. I just think Darius Taylor is not fast. That's not his game. He's very elusive. Mm-hmm. He's very, he just plays a little bit different. But House, how would you evaluate the day for Darius Taylor, and how much do you continue to enjoy seeing him utilized in the passing game?
I'm liking the passing game usage. I like the checkdowns. I've always been a proponent. I think you could really honestly just a lot checkdown yardage right into the running game. Like, because essentially that's what it is. It's an extension of running the football. And I think that's been the takeaway, is being able to stay on schedule offensively just because you're able to hit the check down. You're not afraid to do it. You get the yardage, and, you know, then you're in a more favorable spot as a play caller to be able to kind of dictate what the defense is giving you and make adjustments off of that. Where, like, if you're in long down situation, the defense kind of controls and dictates what you want to do, where you're kind of taking control of the game flow. And I think Darius yesterday was just an example of chipping away, you know, doing the things that they were doing in the passing game, eventually paid off to the point where they're able to get a good look that they wanted. He was able to pop it off and break a couple tackles, make the big explosive. And, you know, those explosive plays are always going to make a huge impact in the course of the game. So to be able to get that, I thought Major at the end of the game was breaking some tackles too, and making plays, and the offensive line was generating more vertical movement. But I think that's a credit to what they're able to do in the passing game, in a sense, to create space and stretch the defense out, hitting some that seam shot to Jamison Gears on the 2-minute drive. I just think that now it's going to be all about, you know, what our defense is going to do in Big Ten play. How are they going to scheme Minnesota? That's what I'm most fascinated for. You get Phil Parker right out of the gates here, and that's going to kind of show us, okay, what did people take away from the first three games from Minnesota?
One minor note that I'm going to be tracking for the remainder of the season. Darius Taylor has now in two games been in the top two of EPA in the passing game. I think that's something that might continue to stick. And to Daniel's point, like, those checkdowns, you might think that, you know, that's kind of conceding or waving the right white flag. The stats would argue otherwise, right? You're getting the ball into arguably and statistically the best player on your team's hands. Like, let them do it. I'm excited to see where that goes. You guys ready to talk some special teams?
Let's do it.
All right. Special teams on the day. Better, not terrible. Again, a 50-yard miss from Dragan Kesic, but generally speaking, I thought overall special teams was okay. I think kick return still leaves a bit to be desired.
That's putting it kindly.
Dragan Drogon was good, 2 for 3, had a long of 52. He had 9 total points, 3 extra points. Mark Crawford, 3 for 42.7 yard average. Not terrible, not great.
You're going to take a 42 yard net average.
Yeah, you'll take it. You're not going to argue. I imagine where Ryan wants to go and why he's so excited is probably the crowning or the anointing of Coy Parrish as the punt returner for the remainder of this season and probably his career.
That would be my guess, which the unfortunate news was Quentin Redding is out for the season. We got that news in the availability report with a lower body injury.
Yeah, it sucks.
From even looking at his Instagram after the game, he watched the game from his apartment, which tells you how serious the injury is for him, which is very unfortunate. So wish it to him a speedy recovery. But in his stead, Lameke Brockington is now your primary returner with Jordan Newbin, which I would love to inject PJ Fleck with some truth serum and look at me in the eye and say, Jordan Newbin is many things for this team. Elusive, I don't think, would be near the top of the list. And then Lameke Brockington's lone return loses the offense 11 yards of field position, which a little part of me dies inside every time a kick return loses you double-digit yards. But to your point, Coy Parrish has a 16-yard return, and I talked about it this morning on Go for Football Sunday on KFAN. This is how I imagine Iowa fans felt with Cooper DeJean the last few years.
Oh, jeez. Let's lower the bar a tiny bit here.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Like, every time I think Coy Parrish is going to go back for the next 3-4 years.
Sure.
My point is you're going to be waiting there with bated breath because you know that he can house it at any point.
There is an anticipation, no doubt. I
mean, correct. And that's where, again, we'll see if Coy is the returner that we think he is. He's only returned 3 punts in his life at the collegiate level, and 2 of them have gone over 16 yards. So House also knows I was so angry when Minnesota kept going into punt safe mode because at this point, why would you just not set up for a return every time? That's here nor there. But House, do you think I'm crazy with the analogy that I just made where, and we'll find out if Coy Parrish is the returner that we think he is, but I'm just using the analogy of, I think for the first time consistently, when you know who the returner punt returner is, because we've seen Demetrius Douglas house one, we've seen Antoine Winfield house one, but if Coy Parrish is going to consistently be the punt returner, every time that punt team goes out, everybody's going to have their eyes on number 3 and the anticipation is there.
Well, you can just circle it going, well, you have someone that is a dynamic player back there, you know, that like, you know, every time that there's a chance that this guy is going to make a play, and featuring his suddenness back there, I think is something that will force special teams coordinators to really scheme strategically around, you know, the presence of Coy back there. And I think that's something that Minnesota continues to want to feature, you know, in these big games, you know, these huge special team swings. If you can get a big play and explosive, that can change the whole course of the game. You know, you look at field position at the end of games, you look at field position margins, and Minnesota, when they're in the positive area in that respect, how much it correlates with success. You know, it was pretty even in the first game, dominant the second game, won it yesterday. So I think that, like, those are the things that you got to really zone in on, is how strategic is Minnesota? Are they able to, you know, still ride that fine line of risk-reward to preserve the ability to win that field position battle at the end of the game based on the situation? As an open field punt, as a coffin corner punt, like, what type of things are going on in the return games that, you know, impact your aggressiveness?
Luke, I'd also say I have no idea how Anthony Smith did not actually block
that punt, that or the kick. Yeah, that was incredible. It went through like both of his hands.
It like, he and Danny Strigauer are the two that got through.
Yeah,
they both put up their arms in House. I don't know if you've watched it back. It nicks Anthony Smith's forearm. Like, he's got his hands together. The ball found a way to slide through his arms. It just barely nicked his forearm. Like, if he just moves his arm one way or another, that might be clean through, or more importantly, that could have been a block for a touchdown. But look at them. for the first time since, and I looked this up, 2020 Michigan, which Minnesota has played, I believe it's 45 or 46 games, they technically block a field goal. I'd tell you, I thought at the time they tipped it. It nicked a forearm, which for the first time in 45 games contributed to them not hitting a field goal. I'd say this too. How concerned are we about Dragan Kesic heading into Big Ten play? Yes, he goes 2 or 3 on the day, but he has now missed 4 field goals. And yeah, 2 of them are from 50 plus, which he attempted 4 field goals of 50 plus all of last year and went 3 of 4. He has already attempted 4 in the non-conference alone, and he's 2 of 4. But maybe the more important thing for you, my kicking expert, that is Wilmer's pride, Luke Feuer, he has missed all 4 field goals to the right.
That part is unique to me, that he's missing them all to the right. I guess the one thing it would tell me is at least it's a consistent miss. If you're more erratic, it's like where is the issue in like mechanics or something. My hope is that he can get this ironed out. I don't put a ton on missed 50 yarders, but you know, the hard pill to swallow, at least for me. And Ryan, you were talking about alerts on your watch. I got an alert on the final kick for North Carolina that he missed, that my heart rate was elevated. So, but yeah, that's the one where you missed 2 in 1 game. That's the part that's frustrating. And one was a chippy, right? The other one was, did end up being 47 yards. That's definitely within his wheelhouse. You're not going to really hate that, but the 27 yarder again is still frustrating. I think he's still got a strong season ahead. I probably put too much pressure on him taking him in the first round of our Big Ten honors.
I put all the blame for this start to the season.
Yeah, it's on me.
The fact that I'm sure Dragan Kesic heard he was taken in the first round of the Gopher Gridiron Radio All Big Ten draft, and that now that's all he can think about. So thank you.
Yeah.
Direct all of your angry thoughts and prayers to Mr. Luke Buehr.
Yeah, it's 100% on me. So. Okay, let's talk a little bit of Big Ten. We're not going to go through the entire Big Ten.
Can I ask you one question before we get into a little Big Ten talk? Is what did you think of PJ Fleck going Mr. Risk Averse on the first couple of possessions there, where doesn't go for it on 4th and a very short 2, kicks the field goal, and then elects to then take the points on 4th and goal from the 2.5-ish? What did you think of those decisions?
I generally didn't love it as a person.
For the record, after the game, his rationale was he wanted to take points early.
Yes, I imagine that's his rationale. It fits his identity like to a T. For me, like, you've dominated thus far. You're just not dominating on the scoreboard, right? And your defense has been playing so well even up until this point in this game. Why not, right? And the last thing I'll say is there's an element of turning to your offense or your offensive line or whatever, and it's saying, I trust you and let's get this done. And he hasn't done that yet. Those are my gripes. I don't know, Daniel, what about you?
I think when you're inside the 5 early in the game, you're playing a Mountain West team, you know, just try to punch it in the end zone, get your team some confidence. And then, like you say, you gotta weigh it out. How's your defense playing? Defense has been playing well. You got them backed up. Maybe you get a takeaway. You know, their whole playbook's going to be different because they're backed up. I think it's a little different if you're maybe in a location not inside the 5. You know, maybe your viewpoint's a little bit different. But in that case, if I was in the shoes, I probably would have tried to punch it in there.
And then how's the last thing I'll say before we can switch over to a little bit of Big Ten talk is, we talked about it in the press box at the time. I still don't know that I understand it. PJ Fleck takes a timeout before the 2-minute warning. So the scenario is he takes the timeout. He's got 2 left. The 2-minute warning is coming up. He takes it ahead of it. Can you explain to me what the thought process could, because I know you spent a lot of time in the offseason going through different game management type of scenarios. What is the thinking with taking a timeout just a few seconds ahead of the 2-minute warning?
Yeah, I think, you know, it gave him an extra 3 seconds. But some coaches are on both sides of the spectrum on this one. This is an interesting one, especially since there wasn't a lot of time on the clock. You know, it's 2:03, 3 seconds before the 2 minute warning. So I think really you could go either way. You could be have the mindset of being like, hey, you want the extra timeout on offense. There's some coaches that think, hey, you want that timeout on defense. And then, you know, you get another timeout for the 2 minute warning. I don't know. I think that that one, if it's like 2:30 on the clock, maybe it's a little bit different than it is with 2:03. But you know, I in the grand scheme of it, they were able to be successful offensively. And there are ways to clock the football offensively that you can stop the clock. You can get out of bounds. So there are ways to stop the clock. I think a lot of people in game management will say you want to take timeouts on defense. That's in those late half scenarios. That's probably where you want to go. So I don't think that was a huge deal, because you know there was 3 seconds or something like that.
All right, let's talk about the other
Apple Cup. How are you feeling, my favorite Washington Huskies fan?
I'm telling you, man. Like, honest to goodness, 16 penalties for 135 yards.
Yeah. 16 penalties is what it ended up being?
16 penalties for 135 yards.
Daniel House is rolling over in his grave live on film.
Their penalty EPA was minus 4.4 points. Like, they consistently shot themselves in the foot in this game. I don't know, man. Yeah, I'll state the score. It's frustrating. 24 for the Cougs. 19 for the Huskies. Just, oh, it's so brutal. I think
prayers to you in your time of grief.
Yeah, I think I texted you earlier last night, Ryan. It's not good company that Jed Fisch is in right now. He's one of the first coaches since in the 1970s with Ty Willingham to lose his first Apple Cup. That is not company you want to be in. If you're not a Washington Husky fan, Ty Willingham led the Huskies to an 0-12 record. I was not high on the Jed Fisch hiring for the Huskies, maybe biased by the fact that I wasn't high on Jed Fisch as a Gopher offensive coordinator, which might have been tainted with Tim Brewster. But, you know, take it for what it's worth. Very frustrating. So let's talk a little bit about a couple other games. Obviously, one of the bigger games being is the big noon game of the week. The Alabama Crimson Tide came into Camp Randall and absolutely curb stomped Wisconsin 42-10. They also lost Tyler Van Dyke, which looks like probably for the season. So they're going to be riding the Braden Locke train for the remainder of the season.
I was told he was 1B the entire offseason. So please advise Luke Buehr. Is he not 1B, or didn't look that way against
I didn't think so.
One of the best defenses?
I didn't think so. Van Dyke started well. I mean, he ended up being 5 for 5. They seemed like they were running the ball well early. But when Braden Locke came in, he ended up being, you know, 13 for 26, 125 yards. He wasn't amazing. I just don't think the Dairy Raid has been a great fit so far. Maybe they don't have the guys. I don't know what you think, House.
Yeah, I just thought that the Van Dyke injury really changed the game. You know, I felt like Wisconsin maybe could have some success running the ball, but then, you know, when Braden Locke came in, they were unable to really execute at a high enough level in the pass game. And, you know, then Alabama, their team speed offensively, I mean, that really was the takeaway. I mean, that was being able to hit vertically and create explosive plays. And, you know, you could just feel the whole game shift when Van Dyke got hurt, because it, you know, it changed Wisconsin's offense. It altered their game plan. You know, they weren't prepping for that. So I thought once that happened, it felt like, you know, that game was going to go off the rails fast.
4th and 1, and they go out a shotgun. And that's what you get for trying to go out a shotgun on 4th and 1. I'd also say that game really flipped when Wisconsin missed a field goal.
Yes.
And then two plays later, 73 yards, yes, they're in the end zone, and it's 21-3 at half instead of 14-3. But I think for the Wisconsin, this was the way it was projected to go. I think Alabama was a 2-touchdown favorite. But now for Wisconsin going forward, it's just if Van Dyke is out, and I'm sure we'll get word here on Sunday, Monday, what his prognosis is going forward. How does the offense change? Because, again, I was advised that Braden Locke was 1B the entire offseason, which is why they took until about 2 weeks before fall camp to name Van Dyke the starter. How much does Wisconsin change? I think there'll be much better days ahead for them, especially defensively for the Badgers, but that Van Dyke injury looms large.
Absolutely. And then another game, mostly because of the upcoming opponent, Iowa 38, Troy 21. At halftime, Troy had a 14-10 lead. Iowa outscores them in the second half 28-7. Caleb Johnson on the day, 25 carries for 173 yards. Yeah, he's pretty good. Two touchdowns as well. In the end, I think you look at the stats on in the passing game. Brennan Sullivan came in and threw one pass for a touchdown, but Cade McNamara, the combined was 20 of 24. And you're like, well, that's pretty efficient, 178 yards. But I have to imagine there was a little bit of unrest in Iowa City. I imagine they'll continue to go forward with Cade McNamara. I didn't get to watch a lot of this game, but I'm curious on your fellow's impression here, other than the fact that Caleb Johnson's just a stud.
I'd say this. I think Iowa played better defensively than the stat line shows. Mm-hmm. I think they got burned on some explosive plays, yep, specifically by one corner, who I think will probably be rectified by the time of next week comes. But Caleb Johnson leads all of Big Ten running backs in yards after contact with 308 yards after contact already, and he is second in missed tackles forced behind Jonah Coleman from your favorite Washington Huskies. He's really good, and that's where this offense revolves around. And I know Brendan Sullivan got into the game early as they were trying to find a spark, and they eventually figured it out as the game goes on. So to me, it's Iowa continues to start slow offensively. You've seen it against Troy and I think it was Illinois State, where they started slow in the first half. Tim Lester then makes second half adjustments and they get things rolling. I think the question comes down to, for me, House, it's an Iowa offense, as I mentioned earlier, that has run the ball for over 200 yards in every single game so far this season. So we've seen Minnesota get better against the run. They've sufficiently stopped the run the last couple of weeks. But I almost think this game, a large part of it's going to come down to Minnesota's defensive line has been incredibly physical the last couple of weeks. Iowa's offensive line, they think, is improved, and now you're facing one of the best yards after contact and just elusive backs in the Big Ten so far this season. But what is your early outlook here on the Iowa Hawkeyes?
Yeah, I'd say just tackling is going to be a big component because of Caleb Johnson, you know, being able to make you miss and also be able to generate some yards after contact. So I think that, you know, being able to wrap up on initial contact is going to be really important. You look at Iowa, I think defensively we talked about it. You know, I think the physicality of their defensive line versus Minnesota's offensive line is going to be the big element of this game. Like, is Minnesota able to effectively protect the quarterback when they get into situations where, you know, they're going to get backed up in this game, and you know Iowa's probably going to stunt and do some things defensively? Are you going to be able to pick that up, not have negative plays, take care of the football? And then when you do get explosives, you're going to have to take advantage of them, because that defense, you know, like you said, I mean, there's a couple throughout games they've been untimely explosive plays that have happened at really rough spots that teams have taken advantage of them. Will Minnesota be able to do that? And when they're available, make the play? I think that's going to be ultimately, like all these games are, the explosive play battle is going to be the key in this matchup.
All right, I'll make a couple quick comments on the Big Ten. You guys don't need to comment until the very last one, but go ahead.
I do say we have to give House the floor because his favorite team.
Oh, I was going to do this.
Okay. I'll let you go for it, and then I'm going to rain on House's parade. So you take the floor, Mr. Luke.
Okay. Oregon bounces back and wins 49-14. They look like the team we kind of thought they were. Michigan struggles a little bit with Arkansas State, only wins 28-18. Notre Dame absolutely drums Purdue 66-7.
Some kids would call that a molly whopping.
Nebraska lays the wood on Northern Iowa. 34-3. Illinois looks great, 30-9 over Central Michigan. Luke Altmyer playing about as well as any quarterback in the Big Ten. Michigan 40, Prairie View A&M 0, and Northwestern beats Eastern Illinois 31-7. Maryland 27, Virginia 13, and Daniel House, drum roll please. Indiana moves to 3-0, 1-0 in Big Ten, beating UCLA 42-13. You are three of seven games complete of winning your bet with Ryan Burns.
No, it's six.
It's six? Six. Okay, six.
You're 6-0. 6-0. Yeah, six I said Indiana was going to be 6-0 in the first six games, and now this was the game, the road game at UCLA. Now they get Charlotte, Maryland. Home game against Maryland, and then on the road at Northwestern. So.
Well, here's what I would tell you, House. Are you ready for Kirk Cignetti to be the head coach of either the Florida Gators or the Florida State Seminoles in 2025?
I'm telling you what, honestly, like anyone who wants a solid, solid head coach, like this guy's done it everywhere. He wins the first season, and I love how he built his roster. You know, he brought a lot of productive players with him from JMU. I think there can be a lot taken from how Indiana has done this, how they built their team. Their approach, the way they do it, a lot of continuity from that coaching staff. I think they had seven coaches join them from JMU. They're playing really well. That wide receiver room is really good. They got a nice mix of skill sets. O'Rourke's playing really well. I think, you know, this team, they're going to be fun to watch in the next, you know, you look at that game, I think week seven, that game, Nebraska. I think it's Indiana, Nebraska after that first six games. So that'll be a fun one to watch.
Well, here's what I'll say, House. Whether it's Florida or Florida State, maybe it'll be Baylor, or maybe he played at West Virginia, and your West Virginia team might be looking for a new head coach by the end of the season, or the team that House hates more than any in all of college football, the Pitt Panthers, for whatever reason, if Narduzzi isn't there, he was born and raised in Pittsburgh. I'm just telling you, I think the odds of after every Indiana win going forward now, that Kirk Cignetti remains at Indiana and is not pursued by a Florida State type. I think you're going to only get 1 year of Cignetti there, unfortunately for you, House.
Man, that'd be wild.
All right, let's wrap this up. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors, Team Dinkytown Real Estate, Homefield Apparel, and the Burns Insurance Agency. We'll be back to preview the game against Iowa. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.